This hour, we are going to talk about the politics related to the terror group ISIS and several other political issues in the news this week. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, August 26th. Originally, we were going to talk with Republican U.S. Representative Paul Ryan about his new book after 7:30 today, but he canceled due to a scheduling conflict. His office says he would like to try again sometime in September. We will still talk with our guest about Ryan's new book and Ryan's possible presidential aspirations. Plus, we will see what our guest has to say about the political implications of the latest round of John Doe documents that were just released, revealing new information about what investigators were looking into regarding Governor Walker's recall campaign. But first, Republicans are criticizing President Obama for being detached toward ISIS, as well as for golfing shortly after his news conference on an American journalist after an American journalist's beheading by the terror group. And we will talk about that criticism, and we will talk about the politics regarding the U.S. approach toward ISIS, and we will wonder how you rate President Obama's handling of the ISIS threat at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Tim Hagel, an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He is also a faculty advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans and the Iowa Federation of College Republicans. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Republicans apparently want Obama to get tougher on ISIS. The president has ordered airstrikes against ISIS. He resumed airstrikes even after the murder of the American journalist by ISIS. This morning we see that Obama has authorized the use of surveillance flights over Syria. What does the GOP want him to do?
That's probably a pretty good question. I think that, as it sometimes happens when you're talking about political criticism, is that the person doing the criticizing, in this case the Republicans, basically would have preferred a different path to have gotten where we are now or to have avoided where we're at any given time. So in other words, as you were saying in your lead-in, that they thought that he was not taking perhaps ISIS as seriously as he should have when he referred to them as the JV team. And if he, in fact, wasn't, we don't know, of course, all the details, secured and classified and so forth, but if he wasn't taking them as seriously as he needed to, that perhaps caused them to grow as quickly as they did. As a Pentagon spokesman indicated, they grew very quickly. Well, maybe if the U.S. wasn't taking them as seriously, that may have been part of it. Although even then, what could we have done more than we ended up doing? And of course, even Republicans are not suggesting that we have, as they call it, boots on the ground, which means combat troops. But Republicans will often say that what should have happened is that we should have perhaps left a greater stabilizing contingent in Iraq to keep ISIS from growing in the first place.
Yeah. Some, though, did I read that Senator McCain wants to, you know, blow ISIS to smithereens?
Well, certainly in one way or another, depending on how any politician puts it, that people would like to see ISIS taken out in some way. The question is, and this was your original question, how? I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to drop a nuclear bomb? Well, of course not. But are you going to send in, as I was saying before, combat troops in some way? That's something that it would seem that we can't do. As is often indicated, the United States is war-weary at this point, but as I heard a pundit say yesterday, but war is not weary of us, so sometimes you just can't avoid it. Doesn't seem like we're at that spot right now, but we also have concerns that ISIS is growing to such an extent that at this point, we're threatened even here in the United States, given various threats that ISIS is making. But the big question is, well, okay, but what are we going to do about that? We can't, at least not to a great extent, violate the sovereignty of these other countries in the Mideast, and some of those countries are not particularly happy about ISIS, too. Maybe we'll get some cooperation from people that we hadn't been particularly friendly with before. maybe not. That's what remains to be seen. And one of the things that President Obama has to do in his administration is try to start to work with some of these other countries that, again, maybe they haven't been overly friendly with, or I shouldn't say they, we haven't been overly friendly with, to see if we can get additional cooperation. On the other hand, yesterday there was news that Egypt and United Arab Emirates had taken some action on their own without coordinating with the United States, so maybe that coordination is going to be difficult to come by.
Yeah. What effect do you think the horrific beheading of American journalist and Marquette, Wisconsin graduate James Foley is going to have on how Obama proceeds?
Well, what it does, if nothing else, is it certainly brings, because of the horrific nature of it and because of the way it was publicized so widely, it certainly brings to a wider segment of the American population the viciousness of this particular group. And, of course, to some extent, that's what this group wants, is it wants it to be known that they are serious, that they are willing to do these terrible things in retaliation, supposedly, for American airstrikes and so forth, and that they will take hostages and continue to attack America in various ways, either individually with captured journalists and others, or perhaps in other ways. And, you know, it may be, like I say, it can... raise the awareness in the United States that these folks are a dangerous threat. Now, again, what does that do in terms of providing additional options for the administration? Well, it may allow them to take greater action, and now I'm talking specifically about the Obama administration, allow it to continue its drone program. That there were many on the left and some on the right, and folks in the middle that were not overly thrilled with the notion that we're just sending these drones and killing random people. Well, here we have an example where somebody is just beheaded, you know, a barbaric act, not even a regular execution, but, you know, we see people shot all the time, but to actually behead someone, that seems to be so barbaric that it's somehow justified then that we can go ahead and try to keep these people from spreading their viciousness across a wider swath of the Mideast.
Yeah. Now, President Obama did resume the bombing to go after ISIS targets in Iraq, if I'm not mistaken, but the news that he has authorized surveillance flights over Syria, essentially spy flights over Syria, apparently... this is a move that could mean that there will be airstrikes against ISIS in northern Syria.
Well, that's what remains to be seen. And as I was saying before, that's something where maybe Syria hasn't been one of our friends in the area particularly, but if they have concerns over ISIS as well, they may be willing to work with us in certain ways. Or we may be willing to take the backlash that we might get if we go ahead and take action without their help. I think that we would be very cautious about doing that, but occasionally that has happened in the past where we've been after particular people and have, I kind of hate to use this word, but violated the sovereignty of another country. We have to, you know, certain ways, maybe it's not a big deal if we do that. In other ways, it becomes more of an international issue and there's more of a backlash. But that's why I say is that the president and the administration have to find ways to work with some of these folks that they haven't found before in order to deal with this common threat, perhaps more of concern to us than it might be to Syria, but to the extent it threatens the government of some other country, that they may be willing to help us out or allow us or look the other way, it might be the best way to phrase it, while we take action to remove that threat.
Well, President Obama took some heat, maybe a lot of heat, for going golfing moments after his news conference on James Foley's murder. Is that legitimate criticism? How bad does this look for Obama to do this? Or what is your take on this?
Well, it certainly looks bad. There's no doubt about it. And that word "looks" is kind of the key. Is that a lot of times the president, whoever it is, has to kind of keep in mind the visuals of, you know, where he is, what he's doing, and so forth. I remember many years ago when President Clinton was coming out of a funeral for somebody who had been in his cabinet. I'm blanking on the name here. It's too early for me. And he was probably, my impression of watching him come out is he was talking with another person that also knew the person who died, and maybe they were sharing a humorous story about this particular person. We don't know what they were saying, but Clinton was kind of laughing, and then he kind of looked up, saw the cameras, and all of a sudden put on a sad face. You know, so Clinton was very good at that visual kind of thing, knowing where he was and making sure that what he was doing didn't conflict with sort of the moment, whatever it happened to be. And the concern here with President Obama is that, at least in this particular instance where there were those pictures of him smiling and high-fiving, that was such a sharp contrast to what he had just been saying, that, you know, from his personal perspective, okay, I did this job, now I'm moving on to this other thing, but from sort of the public's perspective, that they would have expected him to show that sadness, show that kind of boy, this is a terrible situation, I'm not off having a great old time and laughing with my buddies, that I need to be seemingly taking this seriously, which he could have been doing, but, you know, he was relaxing. Well, of course, Republicans in particular have been criticizing him as spending too much time in the golf course and not enough time concentrating on some of these serious issues. And it goes back to what we were saying before in terms of, you know, if you'd taken ISIS more seriously to begin with, this may not have, probably not have gotten as bad as it is currently. But now even some on the left are suggesting, well, wait a minute here, you know, why aren't you doing, you know, this, that, or this other thing? And so it's kind of a combination of the visual of the moment, but sort of a long-term thing, too. And like I said, Republicans have been complaining about this since, well, quite a while, and certainly like Benghazi, when that happened, the president went off and did fundraisers and things, and it just seems that sometimes these things are inappropriate in the context of what's going on at a particular time. On the other hand, the president's schedule is something that's often difficult to change, especially when you're talking about him traveling and the preparation that goes into that. If anybody, you know, I'm sure in Milwaukee, the president's been there, and, you know, it shuts down roads, and you've got all this advance work going on, and so it's something the president often doesn't want to change, but it can be, as we've seen, a point of criticism.
We are talking with Tim Hagel, an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He's faculty advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans and the Iowa Federation of College Republicans. We are talking about politics, and we are talking about the criticism that many Republicans have about President Obama, saying he is detached toward ISIS, as well as criticism for going golfing after his news conference on an American journalist beheading by the terror group. We are taking a look at the politics of the United States approach to ISIS and welcoming your questions and your reactions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think President Obama needs to get more aggressive toward ISIS? Is he handling the situation well? Did his policies and approach to ISIS help it grow to the threat it is today or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about some political issues in the news this week with Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. First, we are talking about the politics of the U.S. response toward the terror group ISIS. Coming up after 7:30, we will talk about the splash being made by Paul Ryan's new book and Paul Ryan's admission that he is considering a run for the White House. And our guest will also offer some insight on other potential presidential candidates coming up in our next half hour. But to our phones now, if you have a thought or a question on President Obama's handling of the threat of ISIS, Paul in Elkhorn is with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi. I think in my mind, it's, I mean, I don't, I'm a Republican generally, but is the pattern. I mean, the president saying that he finds out about these crises by watching the news, like the IRS scandal, things like that. Then the other patterns, like he's actually physically out playing golf during the funeral of the general, the highest ranking combat death since Vietnam. And then, but then he says that doesn't send anybody to that funeral. But then he sends three representatives from the White House to Michael Brown's funeral in Ferguson yesterday. And then, as your guest talked about, doing a very solemn press conference, and then immediately 5 minutes later is out having a good time on the golf course. So yeah, it's an optics thing and it's a pattern thing.
Yeah. You want to comment on that pattern thing, Professor Hagel?
Yeah, it's like I was saying before, it's something that Republicans, at least, have been criticizing the president for some time. A lot of times, taking a lot of vacation, a lot of golfing, and so forth. Well, of course, pretty much everybody will recognize that the president, certainly you want a president that's well-rested and have some downtime because it's pretty much a 24/7 job. And you do have sort of a traveling White House or traveling Oval Office with you, that there are always people that are staffers that are informing you of things. But there is also a concern that sometimes it seems that the president isn't aware of certain problems. And it could be because staffers are not telling him. It could be because he's detached. It's hard to say exactly what the particular problem is, but there is this perception. And again, depending on your political point of view, you may see it more than not. That he isn't as engaged as he should be in a lot of issues. And we may see that problem, to the extent that it is a problem in the eyes of some, gets worse once we get past the midterm elections, because at that point, President Obama will be lame duck in the sense that, well, he can't run for a third term and he doesn't have to worry about helping people in midterm elections. So then you have presidents that are maybe looking history, to their legacy, and so forth. So we'll kind of have to see if that causes a change in President Obama's behavior, if he becomes more engaged or even more detached.
Now, I've seen some criticism from the left, including the liberal media watchdog group, Media Matters, going after Republicans, essentially, and Fox News in particular, for just lay off, they're saying, this whole spiel about President Obama's vacations. George Bush took more vacations, or other Republican presidents took more vacations. And, here's George Bush golfing after some crisis during his administration. Just stop it, is what Media Matters was saying. It doesn't matter. And what's your response to that?
The fact that Media Matters is criticizing Fox News, wow, there's a shock, right? Here's the thing, is that you can always, like I was saying before, that you presidents are always going to take a vacation, that you want certainly a president that's well-rested given the demands of the job. Even for somebody who's supposedly detached, it's still very wearing on a person. I was just noticing the other day, and they always do this to presidents, is look how much a person's hair has gone gray over the course of this, especially a two-term president from the beginning to the end. It's always kind of amazing. And, over 8 years, that's going to happen anyway. But still, it seems it's partly just the stress of the job and so forth. The thing is that, and I saw this comparison with the golfing with Eisenhower, who I can't remember what the number was, but it was, far greater than the 200 or so times that President Obama has been out. Well, okay, but golfing in the 50s is not the same as what's going on today, given the variety of threats and problems domestically and internationally that we've got in this country. The comparison with Bush, that he spent this number of times days out at his ranch as opposed to Obama's vacation. Well, one thing I tweeted to one journalist and I never got a response was, well, is Bush at the ranch the same thing as being on vacation? When you have sort of a Western, so to speak, White House, is that the same thing as you're sort of basically setting up shop outside the Beltway? Is that the same as being on vacation? My guess is in some respects, yes, but in other respects, it's not. And especially when, in President Bush's case, if you're out not necessarily golfing, although he would do other things, work on the ranch, and he was, became a fan of cycling and so forth, is that the same as going out golfing? And certainly there were concerns that people expressed during Bush's administration in terms of visuals and so forth. And the problem for defenders of President Obama is that there are many opportunities for people to criticize him on these visuals, and again, some that seem rather shocking, like, again, kind of laughing and high-fiving out on the golf course minutes after giving what should have been a somber speech or reaction to the Foley beheading. And sort of that close juxtaposition is very jarring for a lot of folks, and that's where presidents, and if not the president himself, his team needs to be aware of these kinds of things in advance and prevent them from happening by making sure the president isn't doing that kind of thing that visually looks very bad from a political point of view.
Well, we just have a minute of until news on this topic. What is it that Republicans want to see President Obama do?
Seem to be more engaged, more active, probably fewer rounds of golf, I guess. But that's always the question is, well, okay, you're criticizing the president for what he has done. What do you want him to do? And especially when we're talking ISIS, that can be a very complex question, given sort of the idea that nobody wants combat troops anywhere in the Middle East at this point.
All right. We will we'll switch gears after the news and talk with Tim Hagel, an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, about Paul Ryan's new book, The Way Forward, and some of the advice Paul Ryan had for Republicans in that book. Paul Ryan was scheduled to join us to talk about his book after 7:30, but he canceled due to a scheduling conflict. The news is next. Congressman Paul Ryan says he is weighing his options. He is considering whether or not to run for president in 2016. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about Paul Ryan's potential presidential aspirations, and we'll talk about the news being made by Congressman Ryan's new book, The Way Forward, and the advice that he gives the Republican Party in that book. Plus, we'll also talk about some other issues in the news involving other potential presidential candidates. And we will welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Who would you like to see get the Republican nomination for president in 2016? Paul Ryan? How about Governor Scott Walker? How about Mitt Romney or someone else? Our guest is Tim Hagel, an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, faculty advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans and the Iowa Federation of College Republicans. And I should note, because we did promote that Congressman Ryan was going to join us at this time to talk about his book, The Way Forward, Congressman Ryan's office called to cancel that appearance or postpone it anyway, saying that the congressman would like to talk with us in September sometime. So we'll see if that happens. We are still going to talk about Ryan's new book and Ryan's possible presidential aspirations with Professor Hagel. And Tim Hagel, what do you think of Paul Ryan's new book, The Way Forward, Renewing the American Idea? In it, he says Republicans can't just focus on their base, that they have to reach out to voters that they would otherwise write off. What do you think of that?
I think that that's essentially true. I'm not sure how he phrased it. He phrased it in that term of essentially write off. It's kind of tricky, that aspect. It's a combination of, well, are they writing off people, or is it, well, we realize that we don't have support with this particular group or area or community or what have you, and need to use our resources more efficiently, and in the sense that maybe over time that becomes a writing off of a particular group. But it's certainly true that Republicans do have to go beyond their base, which is true for Democrats, too. One of the things that I always tell people, particularly here in Iowa, is that for Iowa, that the voter registration is almost dead even between Republicans and Democrats at about 32% each, and the remaining 36% are the what we call here no party voters or the independents. And so you've always got, regardless of your party, you've always got to reach out to that sort of big middle group and convince them that your policy and your way of doing things is going to be better for the future than somebody from the other party. And for Republicans, and you hear about how well in the last so many presidential elections, Democrats have gotten, you know, won the popular vote and so forth, that Republicans need to reach to that middle group and maybe even to some extent the Democrats and try to sway them, not unlike Reagan, where you remember the Reagan Democrats that crossed over during the 1980 election.
Yeah, don't Republicans have to be more in the center than to the right in order to do that?
They do, but of course, what's the center, what's the right? You know, one of the things, of course, that parties will do is try to paint whatever position your opponent is taking as extreme. Oh, this is extreme, that's extreme, you're out of touch, and so forth, when, you know, really they're not. Where a lot of times if you see polls of the entire population on some issue, that they may take a center-right position on certain issues. And yet if you are better at sort of that labeling kind of approach, that you can convince folks that somebody who maybe takes that position is still somehow out of touch. And so it's not always clear where that center is, where that left position or right position is, and a lot of it has to do with in candidates and how they portray their positions and whether they can be labeled as extremist or whether they come across as more moderate, even when their positions are maybe a little bit beyond what the center of the country might accept.
Well, plenty of political observers are saying that Paul Ryan's coming out with a new book is just another indicator that he might also have presidential aspirations. Your take on that?
Well, it's possible that politicians put out books on a fairly regular basis talking about their plan. And a lot of times if you have somebody, and we'll just maybe assume for the moment that Congressman Ryan doesn't have presidential aspirations, but perhaps what he does have are aspirations for the country. In reading some of the reviews of his book, that it sounds that people kind of took away from that, you know, Ryan really wants America to do better, that we're in kind of a bad place, maybe not a horrible place right now in a variety of ways, whether we're talking economically or just in terms of sort of people's impressions as to whether we're on the rise or we're kind of fading. Are we sort of as exceptional as we often like to think that we are? And maybe that has faded a little bit. We're not seemingly as powerful on the world stage, all kind of getting beyond the borders to a certain extent. How are we dealing with problems? Are we coming together to solve the major problems? And sometimes politicians, regardless of whether they want to be president, want to help in various ways, want people to begin to work together like they did in years past and so confront problems past. And so sometimes writing these books is a way for them to say, well, hey, this is how I see how we can come together, whether it's my party or your party or the country as a whole. And if that propels me onto the presidency, you know, great. But if not, that's fine, too, as long as the country does better.
Well, what do you think? What's your analysis? I'm seeing headlines that Paul Ryan says Mitt Romney should run again. And I think I saw Mitt Romney saying that Paul Ryan should run. And then we did hear on Sunday that Paul Ryan says, yeah, I'm weighing my options. I'm deciding whether or not I should or shouldn't run for president. Do you think that is he a strong candidate for president? Do you think he's going to run?
Well, two different questions,
yeah.
Obviously. As far as whether he would be a strong candidate, I know that some Republicans would prefer to see him remain in as the head of the Budget Committee because he's got a very good handle on the numbers. If you recall from the last presidential election cycle, where he put out a couple of videos where they were, you know, kind of nice in terms of trying to explain the situation with the debt and why it was a problem and various things. And because he's so good at that he would perhaps be in a better position to have that knowledge come to bear as head of that committee. And he's, in a certain sense, he's a little on the young side, and it's very difficult for somebody from the House to run for president. We've only seen, I think there was only one person that actually did it, one president did it, without, you know, making a stop as a governor or a senator first. So it's kind of a tough situation to do that. Plus, there are going to be some Republicans that see him too closely tied with Mitt Romney, and as much as Mitt Romney's sort of the desire for him to be president, maybe run a third time, is making the circles for some folks, although Romney keeps saying no, 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 no. But there are many Republicans who don't see him as a strong enough candidate, that they would like somebody who basically is more vigorous in defending the positions that, you know, even Romney took. And, of course, some Republicans see Romney as being too moderate, and they would like to nominate somebody who they see as conservative. Now, will Ryan fit that bill? Perhaps. But, again, it depends on the vigor with which he would defend a variety of principles that the conservatives see, in particular things like on the economic side, trying to reduce the debt, reduce federal spending, kind of get the government under control. It's been growing too quickly for too long, even with Republican presidents. And some Republicans were concerned about George W. Bush, particularly in his last couple of years, where it seemed that government did grow more than what they think it should have. On the other hand, you always have to keep in mind that whatever party it is, you have to nominate somebody that's going to appeal to, as I was saying before, that big middle group, and not be too easily characterized as extremist.
Okay, so what are the odds that he's going to run?
Oh, my goodness. I would say probably pretty low at this point. Mm-hmm. And one of the key factors is going to be, well, who else is in the field? That one of the things that a lot of these potential candidates look at and evaluate is, well, who's there? Do I have a shot of beating that particular person? Do I have a message that will resonate with people that these other folks don't? In the 2012 cycle, there was a point where there were many people that were not happy with the Republican field. And here in Iowa, at least, there were a couple of people that went out to New Jersey to try to convince Governor Christie to enter the race at that point. And Governor Christie said, no, I'm not going to do that. And so then the process went on with the field that we had. A couple people entered late, Governor Perry, who may decide on another run. And so for Congressman Ryan, he's, you know, got to evaluate, well, how would I do against these other folks? They should be tied into Romney's donor network. So even though, again, a member of the House may not usually have the contacts necessary to mount a well-financed campaign, and you have to have that. But if he hooks into Romney's donor network and so forth, he may be able to mount a credible challenge. The question is he going to have that message? And like I say, it really is going to depend a little bit on what the field looks like between the both declared candidates and the ones that are sort of lurking around, also sort of waiting to see who jumps into the fray.
Yeah, so what about, I don't know if you think Governor Walker of Wisconsin is a lurker, but is he the conservative the conservatives are looking for?
You know, it's possible. A little more than a year ago was the first time I heard Governor Walker's name mentioned, and at the time I just saw, you can't be serious. He's, you know, not well known and so forth. But since then, he's become more well known because of things that have been happening in Wisconsin, and particularly the things that he did in terms of the unions and winning the recall election and so forth. Of course, the business with the investigation, the John Doe situation, the documents that came out recently, all that seems to complicate things. And we see this with Governor Christie, who I just mentioned. They've got the Bridgegate. Now, that's a little bit different situation. With when you're talking about the campaign and financing and all that, it becomes very complicated. And a lot of people don't follow it. What they might know as well, is Governor Walker tied to this, or is it just all political? And we're sort of seeing that switching directions a little bit with Governor Perry, where he was recently indicted. And before the indictment was announced, I was talking with a couple of reporters from Texas, and they said, well, does this basically kill Governor Perry's chances of a comeback and running again? And at the time, I said, no, I don't think so, that it sounds like it's Texas hardball politics. And then when it became known, and then the backlash and more information on this prosecutor and her DUI, that it actually may help Governor Perry, because it seems like he's standing up to, you know, this political pressure and so forth, and sort of did a good thing, and especially if the indictment's thrown out pretty quickly. Well, same sort of thing with Walker. This is, has a potential where it could hurt him, but on the other hand, it, if it's seen as just political and not directly connected to him, if he's not the target of the probe, is what seems to be the case, then it may not hurt him. I don't see a way right now that it's going to help him particularly, but the question is would it hurt him, particularly if we're talking about getting the Republican nomination? Obviously, if he were to get the nomination, it would certainly be something that Democrats would be hammering him on, and that's often something that's in the calculus, if not in the minds of the candidates, in the minds of the voters, saying, well, yeah, we really, really like this guy, but he's got this negative thing that could be very damaging in the general election. Maybe we need to find somebody else.
We are talking with Tim Hagel, an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Right now we're focusing on the politics of the 2016 presidential sweepstakes, I guess, for lack of a better term for this, talking about some of the pros and cons facing some potential presidential candidates, including Paul Ryan, Scott Walker, Governor Rick Perry, Governor Chris Christie. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Maybe you can let us know what you think if these recently released John Doe documents are going to be politically damaging to Governor Walker or not. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest political scientist about the possible presidential aspirations of Paul Ryan. Also talking some about the political implications of the latest round of John Doe documents that were released on Friday, revealing some new information about what investigators found or were looking for in regard to Governor Walker's recall campaign. Here's one headline from those documents, and I'd like to get our guest Tim Hagel's thoughts on this. So what happened here is that it was revealed in those documents that Governor Walker apparently, I don't know if he was aware of it, but he was asked whether he was aware that Gogebic Taconite, a mining company that is in the process of trying to build an iron mine in northern Wisconsin, secretly donated $700,000 to Wisconsin Club for Growth, a pro-business advocacy group that was directed by the governor's campaign advisor. Governor Walker said, "Not to my knowledge." The governor said that he played no role in soliciting cash from the mining company for the donation to Wisconsin Club for Growth. So I'm just your take. Maybe you're not intimately familiar with the details of this story, Tim Hagel, but even if Governor Walker isn't a target or wasn't a target of the John Doe investigation, some of these headlines have to be a little bit troublesome in terms of directing campaign donations to a third-party group that doesn't have to disclose where the campaign donations came from.
Well, that question of being troublesome sort of depends on your view of all this, that there are many people that are very concerned about the way campaigns are financed. You hear people talking about dark money that was mentioned before versus other types. People want to get money out of politics in various ways, and that's just not going to happen. Some people are in favor of more allowing money in, but more with more transparency, and so there are kind of always ways of having to deal with this. And campaign financing is a very complex area in terms of whether somebody did or didn't violate the law, whether they were or weren't aware of things. But basically, even if Governor Walker didn't do anything illegal, and maybe nobody else did, the fact that you have sort of these relationships that, you know, occur, and believe me, they occur in both parties, that both parties are finding ways to get money into their campaigns and for their interests in various ways. But you know, it can always seem shady to people, or you can characterize it that way, even if it's fairly innocuous and it's perfectly above, I should say above board since we're talking transparency, but, you know, perfectly legal, that it can be characterized as being shady, especially if maybe you don't want the mining thing, operation to occur or to be approved, then you can say, oh, well, this terrible thing and all this money. And so you can always characterize these things in a way that can hurt a particular candidate or politician. And then that politician, of course, has to be able to say, well, look, this is what it was. It was, you know, there's nothing illegal going on. And, you know, basically these were my interests. So what do you expect? Of course, I'm going to approve this. And so it's, again, a matter of selling it to the voters when it comes election time.
Let's take a call from David in Milwaukee. Hello, David.
Good morning. Great show. I wonder if, even given the tendency for Republicans to be the less educated party, we would vote for someone who didn't finish their undergrad. I mean, George Bush attended Ivy League schools. How could Scott Walker be a contender given his educational background? That's all.
Kim Hagel. Tim, are you going to respond or not?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you were going to come in. Yeah, it's, you know, that's an interesting question. And certainly if Scott Walker were to run, it would probably be brought up. You don't have to go to college to be a smart person. In fact, a lot of smart people didn't finish college. I don't know if he did later, but Bill Gates, a very smart person, obviously very successful, left college to pursue his dreams of computer company and so forth, and there are others very successful. Now, they're the exception rather than the norm, but the fact that somebody does very well, that should be the key. That's that you have the school of hard knocks, as it sometimes referred to, where you say, okay, I don't need the sort of the formal degree. And to a certain extent, if Democrats or others were to attack him on that, they can accuse him of being elitist, because there are certainly a lot of people who do very well in life that don't go to college.
And we'll take Jacob in Burlington. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. I think Paul Ryan's dilemma, as is the Republicans, is on the continuum closer to laissez-faire capitalism, and it's the same policies of Bush that left government tax cuts that let the economy be destroyed by the banks and the mortgage lenders. And I think that's they're caught between a rock and a hard place, and that's where I think Paul Ryan is caught.
We only have about a minute or so. Professor Hagel?
Yeah, and at that point, that's where you start talking about, well, okay, what was it that caused the financial meltdown in 2008 and so forth? That's one view, is that it was this wanting to let the market do itself that it caused that. Certainly there are cycles. On the other hand, conservatives will say, no, it was the excessive regulation Dodd-Frank's and so forth that set up the subprime mortgage market that eventually caused the crash. So you get differing views on this, and because the economy is so complex, it's always hard to say, well, what particular thing caused it, if anything.
So who's in the driver's seat right now for the two parties when it comes to running for president in 2016?
It's a little hard to say. Democrats maybe a little bit, simply because at least seemingly they centered on Hillary Clinton as their nominee. If she doesn't run, then it opens it up a little bit more. But the fact that maybe Democrats are more focused at this point on Hillary gives them a slight edge. But then again, you just have to wait to see who the Republicans nominate and whether it's a strong candidate or not.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Welcome.
Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, Faculty Advisor to the University of Iowa College Republicans and the Iowa Federation of College Republicans. Again, Paul Ryan was scheduled to join us during this half hour to talk about his book, The Way Forward, but postponed that appearance for sometime in September.